Hey, it's Rachel Martin, and this is Up First Sunday. Not sure about you, but one of the things I missed a whole lot during pandemic lockdowns was live music. Sure, there were all kinds of remote performances with artists playing in their living rooms, but it is just a completely different experience than being in a packed music venue with a bunch of strangers all singing the same lyrics, all bound together in this kind of collective joy. That's video from Dua Lipa's concert here in Washington, D.C. in March. The mega pop star released her second album, Future Nostalgia, in early 2020, right as the world was shutting down because of the pandemic. Now, after a two-year delay, Dua Lipa is finally playing these songs on tour, like her hit single, Levitating. I need you all night.
Come on, dance with me. I'm levitating. It felt so surreal. There was this whole surge of excitement. And adrenaline of like, wow, we finally get to do this.
Future Nostalgia won a Grammy for Best Pop Vocal Album last year, and it was the second most streamed album on Spotify in 2021, which is a big deal for any artist. But when you talk to the 26-year-old Dua Lipa, you start to get the sense that it just had to be this way.
It was something that I felt like I knew I wanted to do from a very, very young age. It was, I don't know, maybe in some ways like my calling, or I just felt like that was the thing that was meant for me.
Today we're thinking about ambition and the pressures and responsibilities that come with fame. And we're talking about all these things with one of the most successful musicians in the game right now, Dua Lipa. Stay with us.
I'm like weirdly, freakishly organized with my calendar. Like everything's down to the hour. Everything's planned out.
Which makes sense if you're an international pop star. And that is indeed what Dua Lipa has become. But after spending an hour with her, you sort of feel like you have just had a session with your super successful life coach.
If it's something that I love and something that I'm passionate about, I can do anything. I just need to love it and enjoy it and have fun. And then I will have all the time in the world. I think you can do anything as long as you compartmentalize and you plan and you know what you want.
Dream it and you can be it. Sure, this is the stuff of greeting cards and refrigerator magnets, but in Dua Lipa's case, it's actually true. I talked to Dua on Zoom from Glasgow, Scotland, where she was getting ready to perform. But she and I had actually met in person a few weeks earlier at her show in Washington, D.C. I was whisked away for a quick meet and greet backstage after the concert, and Dua's dad popped in at that moment to tell her great job and to give her a kiss on the cheek. At the time, Dua was wearing designer sweats, but a few minutes earlier, she had been floating above this huge crowd on a levitating stage wearing a black catsuit. In that moment, I asked her dad what it's like to see her perform like this, and he said he pinches himself every time to think about how far she's come. I asked Dua about her dad and his influence. He's a musician, right? Your dad?
Yeah.
Or he was when
he was
when
he was in a family, he was in a rock group in Kosovo.
And your family left Kosovo in what, the early 90s?
Yeah,
before the war, right?
In 92 they moved to Kosovo. It was as like the war in Bosnia was happening. My mum's half Bosnian, so her mum was in Sarajevo at the time. But they moved to London as like the situation started getting really difficult in ex-Yugoslavia. Yeah, I guess something that people like forget all the time is, you know, people don't really want to leave their country unless they really have to. You know, it's really out of necessity. And they had lots of friends who also left Kosovo for London. And so they had like a community of like young Albanians that moved from Pristina to London. And, you know, they were working in bars and restaurants. And my parents were working at this pub in Baker Street called The World's End. Yeah, you know, they had a great time in London, but they always had that kind of idea in the back of their mind that they would always want to come back to Kosovo at some point.
Go back to Kosovo.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And then they made that happen.
Well, yeah, it was, first they were like, oh, we'll only be here for a little while. And then a little while turned into, gosh, I want to say like 12, 13 years. Like when I was 11, we moved to Kosovo. We moved back to Kosovo.
What was that like for you? I mean, when you're 11, you're old enough to protest. I mean, when you're 11, you have a world. You have friends and a life in London.
Yeah, I don't know. I was really excited about it. You know, when you're in London at the age of 11, you were like finishing year six. And then you would go into a secondary school. So all my friends were going to go to different schools. And I, instead of going to a different school, I was going to a different country. And my parents really kept traditions and like me knowing my roots and where I'm from and Kosovo always in my mind. And, you know, Albanian was my first language I spoke at home. And then English was something that I did in school and I spoke to with my friends. And so I was always very excited. You know, I had cousins that I hadn't really seen, but I had like a close connection with them because I'd always be on the phone to them, but I hadn't met them.
Yeah.
So it was just a very interesting and exciting period of my life. You know, I was really excited. I was also really excited at the idea that people wouldn't find my name Dua as weird as they did in London, which is something.
Because we should just say for people who aren't familiar with your music or your biography, this is not a stage name. Dua Lipa is your name.
Yeah, Dua Lipa is my name. I don't have a middle name. Lipa is my surname and Dua is my first name.
And you had to explain yourself a lot in that.
Yeah, and you know, I think with a name like Dua, you always have to explain where you're from because people would always be like, oh, where are you from? You know, where's your name from? And so I was very excited at kind of having, you know, that kind of normalcy show up when I moved to Kosovo. But then that was also interesting experience as well. And, you know, going to Kosovo, learning, you know, doing subjects in a completely different language. Although I spoke at home and I thought I knew how to speak Albanian properly. Everyone was like, oh, it's like the English girl talking Albanian.
Right.
And then I had like, it was different obstacles to overcome, you know, learning chemistry and science and maths in a completely different language and trying to come to terms with all the grammar. And yeah, it's interesting going into that at 11 years old, but I think I wouldn't change it for the world because it really helped me become who I am.
There was another reason why being in Kosovo was so difficult for Dua. She felt from an early age that she was bound for stardom, and she also knew it wasn't going to happen in Kosovo. So when she was just 15 years old, she told her parents she wanted to move back to London, with or without them.
You know, I really missed being in a place where I felt like anything was possible. When I was living in Kosovo from the age of 11 to 15, you know, I loved doing music, but I just felt like there was no way that I could really cut through all the noise without being in a place where everything was happening. Like, I felt like I needed to be in London to make my dream a reality. And that was kind of where my head was at. That's what I felt like I needed to do and where I needed to be. And I guess my promise to my parents was like, well, I'm going to go to school, obviously. And while I was doing that, then I was focusing on music, and it was just kind of like, let's just see what happens kind of thing. And, I think after many conversations, I persuaded my parents to finally let me go, and they did.
Where did that sense of confidence come from? I mean, had someone come to you who you respected and looked up to and said, you've got what it takes and you need to figure out how to make it happen? Or was it internal?
Honestly, no. People would tell me that I could sing, but it wasn't to the point of like, yeah, you could make it or this could be something. It was just always it was like a playground dream. It was something that I felt like I knew I wanted to do from a very, very young age. And it's kind of, I can't really explain it. It was, I don't know, maybe in some ways like my calling, or I just felt like that was the thing that was meant for me. And I was going to do anything in my power to achieve that in some way. And you know, I feel like it was just like a series of events that kind of led me to this place.
Her success hasn't come without challenges. Right now, she's facing lawsuits alleging copyright infringement over her song Levitating. When I asked about this, her press person interrupted and said she would not comment. And then, even for someone with seemingly magical powers to manifest her own destiny, Dua has moments of self-doubt. Can you tell me about a time when you felt like you were maybe I don't know, walking through someone else's life and pretending, and would they even believe me? Do I belong here?
For me, it was like, in the beginning when I first started, all the response was like, oh, this is so good, and, you know, it's really nice and fun, and it all started off great, and I would do interviews, and people would be like, oh, like, what do you say to the haters? And I was like, honestly, there is no, like everything's great, and it's so nice, and then all of a sudden, there was like a turning point, and it just kind of completely shifted, and changed, and it wasn't even that, it was just like, I don't know, social media just kind of took over. There was like this one little like dance routine that I did when I was performing, and people took that one little snippet and decided to base my whole stage presence and who I was as a performer on stage based on that one dance routine.
One online commenter said her dancing lacked energy, and that spiraled into a viral meme that wasn't very flattering.
Of course it got to me. I was at a point where I was like so happy I was doing everything that I wanted to, but then there was people who made me feel like maybe I wasn't good enough, or I didn't deserve to be there, or I wasn't cut out to be a musician. And I'm just like, what was important and what was good for that to happen was I realized that what anyone says doesn't actually matter. And that was actually like, it was something that I learned during the period of writing Future Nostalgia, was I was able to like shut people out. Now, if anybody says anything, like I really, it doesn't even bother me. Like nothing even cuts through, because I realized that if you're passionate about something and you're good at your job and you write from the heart and you make things that make you feel good, no one can take that away from you.
Coming up, we'll talk about Dua Lipa's most recent venture, which still has her in front of a microphone, but doing something a little different.
First of all, I just want to start with, what was your concept of sobriety before embarking on that journey yourself?
I don't think I had a concept of a sober life before I embarked on it.
It's Up First Sunday. I'm Rachel Martin. Earlier this year, Dua Lipa launched something called Service 95. It's described as a, quote, concierge service in the form of a newsletter. It's full of recommendations and a podcast that goes with it called At Your Service. You have a lot of interests, Dua. You are a busy woman. You are on tour for a massively hit album. You're going to have your first starring role in a movie this year. And you are a podcast host, which I'm going to be honest, is a little annoying because you're good at everything else, Dua. Now you're coming for my job. No,
I think honestly, Rachel, I think there's room for all of us. And it's very different. It's very different.
It's very true. It's very true. As a podcast host, Dua interviews thinkers and celebrities who she admires. People like Amal Clooney, Russell Brand, Elton John. And I gotta say that while there are a lot of celebrity podcasts out there these days, this one is pretty substantive, which she credits to her guests.
They've all been so so giving with their time, with their knowledge, with their stories and experiences, that you can't help but leave inspired by these people who are so profound in so many ways as well, just by hearing them talk. And I set out as it being just of service to other people. And I found that this has also been such a service to myself as well. There's also, it's been interesting in this season, you know, there's been this like common theme of duality with so many of my guests.
What do you mean?
A lot of them have come from, you know, either children of immigrants or, having this kind of dual nationality and kind of coming to terms with what that's like and what that experience is.
I know that popped up in your conversation with the author Hanya Yanagihara about her own immigrant experience.
Did you ever try to change your name?
No, I didn't.
I did. So good for
I had
you.
Like fantasies of like, oh, maybe I could be called like Amber or something. Right. I was like, Amber of everything. You tried to change your name.
Yeah, I went by my middle name for a while, Catherine. And
oh, really?
But it never worked. So when we moved a lot, and I kept trying to get people to call me Kate, and it just did not work. And I'm
it
not
just
a
didn't
Kate.
Stick.
It didn't stick, and it did not stick. But I think you're absolutely right. I think you kind of realize that you're of both countries and neither, and you learn to make your peace with that.
It's just been so many beautiful conversations in making people feel less alone.
Did you seek that out?
No, honestly, there has been no conscious decision to seek it out.
Hmm.
It's been conversations that have led to that. And I'm just like, wow, it's just happened in so many instances. And it's very interesting to me.
The topics Dua covers in her podcast are sometimes really heavy, like a conversation with Nadia Murad, a Yazidi woman who was abducted and raped by ISIS. Even a conversation with Elton John starts off in this light way, like a cotton candy celebrity interview.
Hi, gorgeous.
Thank you so much for doing this. I'm so happy to
But then it turns disarmingly serious when Elton John opens up about his past addiction and finding faith.
My soul was void of anything to believe in. All I believed in was my career, drugs, alcohol, sex, and I didn't put any credence in having a belief of anything. And then
these are heavy, sober conversations that do stand in contrast to your music in a lot of ways. I mean, your music, especially Future Nostalgia, it's joy, it's a dance party, it is this release, it's happy. I guess my question is, does the podcast and these kinds of conversations, is it satisfying your curiosity in a different way than music does? Is it giving you something else?
I want to say yes to your question, but I also feel like both the music and the podcast, they're different parts of who I am, but they just make mm-hmm. up me. I've always seen myself in the reason behind, you know, my newsletter as well, calling it Service 95, is I've always seen myself in whatever area of my profession is being of service. Even when I'm making my music, I see myself as somebody who's just here to serve in some way. As for scratching the itch of curiosity in terms of the podcast, these are things that just interest me on a daily. These are things that I want to share with others. These are my interests. These are, you know, conversations that I want to have with people. I feel like social media, especially now, there's such an influx of so much information. And I feel like sometimes it's really hard to grasp, like, things that really interest you, things that you want to know about, things that you should be supporting. And that was kind of where I started getting a little bit foggy in terms of, like, the activism side was, you know, if you claim to be an activist or somebody who wants to speak up about any injustices, then you have to speak up about everything. And you have to do it imminently and immediately. And if you don't, you're not supporting and you're not doing enough.
Did you feel that?
Well, I feel like that's just the air of social media at the moment. Mm. And I think it's not allowing people the opportunity to really learn about every cause and understand what's going on and then really speak from the heart. It's just like immediate response has to happen. Use your social media. And it's great because with social media, you can have that immediate response. And if you are well-versed in it and you can support that, then absolutely. But I just felt like I also wanted to have like a community, like with both the newsletter and the podcast, where I can kind of introduce certain things that I feel like need listening to, you know, and I want to be able to give people the tools to be able to make their mind up for themselves.
Dua Lipa made up her mind a long time ago about the life she wanted, the career she wanted. She's done so much of it on her own, but high-profile collaborations have helped broaden her appeal. Case in point, her massive hit with Elton John from his album, The Lockdown Sessions. It's a remix that combines two of Elton John's old singles, one of them Rocket Man. Dua Lipa handles the chorus. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Till touchdown brings me right again to fight. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no. Cold Heart, kind of a big hit. This is the collaboration that you did with Elton John. And your conversation with him in your podcast is great. I mean, it's very cool to hear the two of you talk. In that conversation, he said that Cold Heart could end up being his biggest single of all time. I mean, that's crazy. What's it like to know that you are responsible for giving Elton John his big break?
No, it's hardly that at all. the songs speak for themselves. You know, they're iconic songs that will live for many, many lifetimes. And for me, it was honestly just an honor to get to do that with one of my musical heroes. It really was. And to be able to lend my voice in that way, I do it a million times over. So I'm just grateful for the opportunity. But it was amazing to get to do that. But I mean, I didn't really do anything there. I was very lucky to have been asked to collaborate with him.
It occurs to me that when Dua is developing relationships with these huge names in the music world, like Elton John, that she must ask for advice, right? About the pitfalls that are out there, how to avoid them in a long music career. So I asked her about any themes that emerge in those conversations.
I haven't actually had that kind of conversation at all.
And then you start to hear the life coach in her come out again.
I feel like everybody's journey is so unique, and I think everything's a learning curve, and we're all, you know, human. We have to go through those experiences ourselves.
And I'm not sure whether to believe her, the bit about not asking for advice, but it doesn't matter, because whether all those words of wisdom come from a book, a friend, or a wise inner self, it's all working. And as a result, Dua Lipa is flying. This episode was produced by Lee Hale and edited by Jenny Schmidt, with help from Mark Rivers, Denise Couture, and Eric Maripodi. Our supervising senior producer is Bruce Oster, and our supervising producer is Leanna Sindstrom. We'll be back tomorrow with all the news you need to start your week. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Come on, dance with me. I'm levitating.